Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be responding to your email questions and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It's lovely to be back.
Great.
I've missed you.
Say that again?
Missed our Tuesday afternoon meetings.
Yes. 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 I missed having you here.
Well, thank you, although I understand you guys had a good time while I was gone, too. So
we had some fabulous shows in your absence.
Yeah. Now, I want to tell you before we go much farther into this that I can barely hear you.
Oh, you can barely hear me.
Maybe the folks who are making all this work for us can rectify that.
Let's see. And
so
I will try to speak up also.
Huh?
I will try to speak up also. Is that better, Sherry?
Marginally.
Marginally. I'm going to start shouting here.
Just yell at me.
I will do that.
So, yes, you had some good shows while I was away, and now, hopefully, we'll have a good one today.
Yes.
So all we need to do is have people realize that, well, you've had live shows. You've had all kinds of people on the show, haven't you?
Yes. Yes, we did.
Yeah. I'll have to get those archives out and listen in.
Yes, we had Dave and Deb talking about sustainability.
Uh-huh.
And then we talked with Jen about the work in Africa.
Well, see there.
And
now
then
all that's left is me to talk about the Peace Center in Assisi.
Yes, yes. And we also had Melinda talking about spiritual practice and therapy.
Oh, that's right. Well,
yes.
That was quite a lineup.
It was quite a lineup.
Yeah. I should go away more often.
Did you want to say some more about the Assisi and your trip to Italy and the Peace Center?
Well, it was just that it was very fun, and we did get to go visit the building, and it's still available, and I have decided that what I think we need to do is give up trying to raise the money to buy the building.
Yes.
And I think we ought to just borrow it. We need to find somebody who has a good deal of money to loan and could loan it to us and give us a year or so to start paying it back.
Yes.
Give it to us at a really good interest rate and or maybe even a no interest rate and be the person that got an International Peace Center started there in Assisi. Not that there aren't other ones. There are, but not like what we envision. So there'll be some new pictures up on the web pretty soon to inspire people to help me find that person who has just been dreaming of investing their money in something with this kind of potential for being a good influence in the world.
Yeah.
So that's my new direction. That's what I came home with.
Sounds wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Find the money to borrow to buy the house now.
Yeah.
And start paying it back in a year or so.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think that people will support it. I think it's just very difficult to imagine, giving a lot of money to something that doesn't exist. It could just be, paying for my trips to Italy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which it isn't, by the way. But
yes.
But once people see it and it's a real place and they can come and visit and see what we're doing there, then it'll be real and it's easier to have a relationship with something that we consider real rather than something that we, just see as a vision or kind of imaginary.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's that's where I'm heading.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. That sounds exciting.
Yeah.
And I've noticed some new peace webpages up on the Living Compassion website.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, they're really great. I enjoyed browsing through them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the sustainability information is coming along, the peace is, stuff is coming along, and of course the Africa stuff, which is, you know, it's always a lot is happening there. And
yes.
And we get a lot of information from there. So, and of course we're going to be going there in a shockingly short period of time, and then we'll attempt to do what we did last time, which was, you know, write back and keep people really updated about what we're doing there, because we have a huge work list this time. Huge.
Yes. Yes. I remember seeing the Africa goals for this year, and it's really exciting, all the projects.
Yeah. Yeah. And we intend to really move forward on those goals and work with the people there to set additional goals. So, because, you know, we only get over there once a year, so we have to really attend while we're there.
Yes.
And before long, of course, we might be going over more often, and still we need to attend.
Yes.
Yeah, take advantage of the opportunity.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Sherry, let me give out our phone number here.
Okay.
The phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you today. It's toll-free in North America. The number is 866-613-1612. And if you're further away than North America, you can reach us at 001-858-268-3068. Sherry, we have a caller on the line.
Excellent.
I'd like to welcome Chris from North Carolina. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Good evening.
Hi,
Chris.
So, a friend of mine recently committed suicide, and this has brought up a lot of opportunity for me in going through the process of grieving over the loss of this person. And the thing that I'm getting stuck on is the difference between grieving over the loss and suffering over the loss of the person.
Mm-hmm. And what have you seen about it?
Well, my initial reactions were along the lines of, you know, why wasn't I a good enough friend to stop this? What could I have done better? You know, what if I had made that one last phone call?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think are all kind of control things,
mm-hmm.
and I know that I have no control over another person's actions.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have enough time in the day to make sure that you are absolutely up to date with everyone in your life, to make sure that you're properly controlling their
right.
behavior.
And I understand that.
Yeah.
But as I go through the grieving process, and maybe it's just I don't have a lot of experience with people close to me dying, and so it's something that's fairly new to me. But maybe
which
the thing
in itself is something to be grateful for.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess that's why I'm kind of taken aback by this.
Yeah.
And certainly because it was a suicide and not a natural death or an accident or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I grieve for this person, I don't know if it's egocentric karmic conditioning coming back and then saying, well, you should have done this, or...
Well, now, I can answer that one. And I think you can too, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's just self-hatred.
Right.
You know, that's just cruelty.
Then how do I experience the loss without getting sucked into the self-hatred?
Right. So if in fact the feeling had arisen, I wish there had been something I could have done.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's a kind of a, we could say, a genuine expression of grief.
Okay.
To just know that if you'd had any idea, if there were anything you could have done, you would have done it.
Mm-hmm.
You would have, and you know that. And you didn't know, and you didn't have an opportunity to do anything differently from the way you did, and that's just how that is, and that's... it's disappointing.
And that's not self-hatred trying to be really, really subtle and sneaky?
Well, it can be, but generally, of course, the way we can tell is, do you feel bad? or are you sad? So that kind of disappointment, you know, the kind of helplessness and that sort of thing, generally leaves us feeling sad.
Right.
Not beaten up. Not like we've done something wrong or we're a bad person.
Yeah.
And so I know that that's kind of a gross thing to try to be looking at, but that's certainly where I would focus in.
Okay.
And it doesn't mean that somebody can't feel bad even about that. And that to me, that's the point that you're, you know, that's the subtle point that you're looking at.
Right.
You know, when does it slide over? And as we know, self-hatred will use anything. And, of course, this is one of those cases where, to me, it becomes really clear that self-hatred is the proper term, because here you've lost someone you love, and that karmic reaction or that self-hatred is using it as an opportunity to get you.
Right.
I mean, that's ugly. So to stay in that place of allowing it to be sad when it's sad, or, you know, whatever the feeling is, you know, we have a lot of information that at times like this, often people will feel angry at the person. So whatever the feeling is, the emotion is that arises, to allow that to be there and to allow it to pass through, and to realize that as soon as it turns into a conversation, it's no longer a genuine emotion.
And I guess what's happening for me is when it starts turning into a conversation, it's so slow and subtle that it waits till it gets to the point where it's so obvious to me that I feel that that's where I'm, you know, not seeing it happening. I'm seeing the initial emotion of loss, and then later in the process, I'll be at the point where I'm almost beating myself up over it.
Right.
And I'm not seeing where that transition point.
That's right. Well, you know, who can blame you? Okay, this is what we're up against all the time. This is what you were up against before this happened. This is what you're going to be up against when this phase of your life, you know, slides into the past, and it's not something that you're focused on all the time in this way.
Right.
And that is, I'm here. Okay, I'm here. I'm conscious. I'm aware. I'm, and then I'm gone. How did I get there? How did I get from I'm enjoying my life to I'm a rotten person because I, whatever.
Right.
Or I should have done this, or I shouldn't have done that. This is, you know, to me, this is the kind of the heart and soul of awareness practice.
Exactly. And this, I guess, for me is just, you know, it's an unfortunate situation. And after the initial grief, I was like, well, how can I use this as an opportunity? And this is one of the things that I've seen.
How can I
use this as an opportunity to grow and to work on awareness practice?
Right. And we tend to be more willing at times like this because it's so painful.
Right.
Yeah. And of course, the trick then is to stay that willing when we're not as aware of the pain.
And any suggestions on how to do
meditation? Well, you know, I like meditation.
Right.
You know, that's the thing that to me most effectively, efficiently trains us to see those subtle movements and transitions.
Right.
You know, that what we're doing when we sit in meditation is watching ourselves wander off and bringing ourselves back, wandering off and coming back, wandering off and coming back. And the more we do that, the more likely we are to do that when we're up walking around or driving to the store or at work or wherever it is. And, of course, conditioning is just a master at distracting us so that it can slide in some kind of suffering information or process or whatever it is when we're distracted and not looking. And that's what we've got to catch on to. And, of course, it's conditioning, self-hatred, you know, all of those out-of-center kinds of experiences that tell people meditation is hard, you don't have time, you can't really do it, because, you know, there's a huge investment in having you stay ignorant, because, you know, then that system is in control of your life, and you're not.
Right.
So times like this really inspire us to want to have more say about our lives, and to realize the importance of being able to direct our attention and to stay in awareness, to stay in conscious, compassionate awareness, instead of basically colluding with, believing the voices when they say that something else is going to be more what we want or will make us happier. We're on retreat right now at the monastery, and somebody was saying in group the other night, we had done a sitting practice, an exercise around meditation, and what the voice would come in and say is, okay, I'll help you survive this, and then when this is over, then, you know, you can have your life back, you can have your awareness back, but I'll get you through this. Okay? And what the person realized is that voice has been doing that with everything in his life, possibly for all of his life. So all of life becomes something that conditioning is going to help you survive.
Right.
Well, we don't need help surviving life. We need to live life. You know, that's where the joy is. But when we get talked into, there's something better in unconsciousness. There's a way to be inattentive that's going to give us more. And, you know, there's been a lot of effort put into convincing us of that. And we do fall for it with great regularity. And, again, times like this make us realize that not being able to direct our attention, not being in charge of our life experience takes a big toll, number one, all the time, and has huge ramifications in the suffering department when situations like this arise.
Right.
And they do arise. You know, that we can know about life. All kinds of things are going to happen to us.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Sherry. I appreciate everything you do.
Take good care of yourself.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Chris. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, that's an important point you're making there, the difference between the grief and when it becomes self-hate.
Yeah. And you know, it's really the same with anything. You know, when does anger move from just a rush of energy going through to something that is being directed at someone or being directed at the person feeling the emotion? When does happiness go from a genuine enjoyment of the moment into something that conditioning can use to further its control on your life? So, yeah, it's really important to be able to see those subtle changes.
Yes. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome John from Los Angeles. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening. John?
John, are you there?
I am here.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Good.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, Sherry. Can you hear me?
We can.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we didn't for a second, but then you arrived.
I've surfaced.
You've surfaced. That's right.
Welcome back from Italy.
Thank you.
A few weeks ago, we were talking, and a koan had been suggested to me of I Don't Know from you, mm-hmm. and I'm finding that pretty challenging. At this point, my health issues sort of escalated pretty rapidly, and I'm sort of embroiled in the medical community, and they don't like it when you say, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And so I've been...
And you would enjoy it so much if they would say that to you periodically, right?
All of them have very certain sort of opinions about what I should or should not be doing. Mm-hmm. And I sort of listen, and then I kind of... I don't respond to them pretty much right away, and then I go and sit with it and then see what my body really is capable of dealing with, and I make decisions based on what I think is, you know, kind of a compassionate perspective on what I need to do without sort of necessarily leaping under the knife, which is sort of what they all want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But the challenge I'm sort of experiencing with I Don't Know right now is I feel really very fragile, and the sort of the nature of the injury is interfering with my practice in that conditioning is really latched onto, wow, this really hurts way too much for us to sit here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go and I'll sit, and you know, the nature of my injury is spinal, and it is actually significant, I guess, from whatever medical perspective you want to look at it. And the sort of end result is I'm feeling kind of fragile and a bit disconnected, and I Don't Know is actually somewhat becoming, it feels like, my experience is, it's becoming part of a tool sort of for conditioning to practice.
Yeah, as we were talking about with Chris, you know, it's going to, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to take advantage of this because you're vulnerable. And any time we're vulnerable, conditioning just swoops in like a, you know, a team of buzzards to pick the bones clean if it can.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if you've ever read the story. I can't remember the young woman's name, unfortunately, but a young Japanese woman in, I think, the first part of the last century, but I'm not certain of exactly the time. You can tell I don't know a lot about this, but here's the part that I do know. She was actually dying of tuberculosis, and she had one of the most profound awakening experiences that have been recorded in modern times. And she did it while bedridden. So, you know, there are a lot of, beliefs about how meditation has to be and blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
And for a person who has a healthy body and can do what is necessary to sit in the way that is easiest to practice awareness, okay, so that's the... sitting upright, spine straight,
right.
That's the easiest way to be present, to be aware. That's great, and it's a good thing for a person to do. And, you know, I have kind of zero tolerance for people who, well, my knee this or, you know, my shoulder, whatever. Because if we're really sincere about practicing, then we'll make the effort to get ourselves to the point where we can sit, and by that I mean where we can sit pain-free, because pain, contrary to all of those ideas that people carry, sitting is not meant to be painful.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, sitting is very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And as we say in Zen, with the ideal comes the actual. So
I'm sorry, can you say that again, Sherry?
With the ideal comes the actual.
Okay.
So then there is a spinal injury.
Right.
And so that makes it harder. It doesn't make it impossible. It just makes it harder because
right.
You can't sit in a way that is easy for the body and easy for conscious awareness. So then you'll need to find the way that you can sit, that might have to be in quotes, comfortably, and then you will practice awareness in that physical posture.
Yeah, there. My experience right now is that there's an emotional component for me, which, I mean, you know me well enough. I'm pretty vital, or I've projected myself to be pretty vital, and I find myself, you know, there's a paring down that's going on about what I'm able to do in terms of being in the world, you know, and it all seems to be kind of paring down to this sort of survival mechanism of what do I need to do to make it okay, you know, you can't touch me, I can't walk down the street that way, I have to, you know, it's this constant
yeah.
checking in to do this because I'm getting, well, aside from getting messages from doctors, you know, these dire sort of messages, which are really not very encouraging, actually, you know, my own projections is that I need to protect myself. And in a very sort of odd way, it makes me feel more fragile.
Now you're this is really the same exact question that Chris had.
Okay.
How do we tell the difference? Because there is what conditioning is going to do is attempt to move you into smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller places.
That's what it's feeling like, yeah.
All the time telling you how awful this is and throwing in regular doses of how this is your fault and if you were a better, different person, this wouldn't be happening to you.
Yeah, or you should be more vital and it doesn't matter and it's only pain and blah, blah, blah.
That's right.
Content, right?
Yeah, so that's, once again, that's what we're looking at. What is the truth of that? And the only way that we can know what is the truth of that is to be at center.
Mm.
Okay? Because the minute a conversation starts, we are out there in conditioning, and there is no good information for us.
Right.
Yeah. So from center, there is a sense of knowing that actually is expressed in not knowing.
Okay.
So, in other words, is it possible for you to... blah, 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 whatever the end of that sentence.
Right. For not knowing, for me, is there's an image of me kind of throwing up my hands and kind of surrendering, and I'm not sure that that's actually comfortable for me, because knowing, not there's also been periods in my practice where not knowing was just okay. Like, this
that's
is
right.
Okay, I don't know, and I'll just sort of let life tell me what needs to be.
That's
I need
right.
to listen, so I can kind of listen.
Yeah, so throwing up my hands and surrendering is ego taking over, I don't know.
Yeah, I think now as I'm talking it out with you, yeah, I hear that more, because it feels there's a sort of there's a lot, I guess there's so many fear messages being sent at me, and at a certain point I think some of them are getting through, or I'm projecting that I need to listen to these, because they're coming from these such sensible authorities, you know what I mean?
They're, yeah.
These sensible projections that I sort of relate to, and I go with I don't know. And as I say, I don't know, there's almost a paralyzed quality to it, because I don't know, and so I don't do anything.
That's right. And, of course, that's not what I'm talking about
right.
at all.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. So the answer to the question, you know, can I blah, 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 I don't know. I'll see.
Right.
And what I'm not, you know, my obsession, we're doing this this week at the retreat at the monastery, and I talk to people about this as often as they will stand still for me to talk to them about it. The whole point of this is, where are you looking to get the information?
Right.
Are you looking to center, or are you looking to conditioning?
I don't know.
Yeah. And it's essential that you find out. Now, there are some clues. All right? So, loss, lack, deprivation, fear, something wrong. Self-hatred.
Right.
Okay? Those are all conditioning.
Right.
When we get any of that kind of thing back, we know that we're in a conversation with conditioning.
Okay.
And when we get back a sense of, as a response, a sense of willingness and well-being, then we can be fairly sure that we're in relationship with center.
Yeah, I'm not getting that a lot lately, because a lot of physical pain for long periods of time is taking a lot of my attention.
Yep.
You know, it's just, and to be really blunt, it's annoying.
Oh,
and there's
yeah.
there's a sense of annoyance that I have, because I...
Well, ego doesn't like anything to interfere with it. Now, on the one hand, of course, this is ego's dream come true, because as long as you identify with it, you have the most legitimate reason in the world to be the center of the universe.
That's correct.
I mean, this is really, 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 really real. It's really true. It's physical. Okay, so the things, as you know, that are in that category, anything physical, anything having to do with money, and anything having to do with children, then everything goes out the window, because it's really true,
right.
And we have to turn our lives over to conditioning so that we don't make a mistake,
yeah.
Which is just so ludicrous that, you know, we can just hardly express the absurdity.
So it all becomes a question of content and my sort of where my attention is in relation to it.
That's right. That's right. Because here's the thing. This is how bad it gets. This is what we're really up against. You could be in that level of pain every day for the rest of your life. How are you going to be all right with that? The question is not, how do I get out of this pain? The question is, how can I be all right with life as it is?
You know, it's actually, the pain isn't so much the issue as the message I'm getting, that here's the interesting thing, the essence of the content of the message that I'm getting from people that are talking to me about this is, if I do the wrong thing, it's interesting, the metaphor now, but if I do the wrong thing and I don't know what that could be, I could paralyze myself.
Yeah.
I could be paralyzed from the neck down.
Yeah.
And
that's a
really bizarre message to get from a doctor.
Yeah, and I live in a world where people come up and tell me what has happened to them as the result of following bad advice.
Yeah, it feels like bad advice, too.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's our society.
Right.
It's a fear-driven society. You know, it makes the wheels of the economy turn. So, you know, it is true that that could happen. It is also true that that could happen to me.
Mm.
Okay? It's not actually it's not necessarily more likely that it's going to happen to you than to anybody listening to this conversation.
Right.
So, can something happen to us in any moment? Durn tootin'.
Right. It's interesting because I'm making choices right now, actually subliminally, now that we're talking this out, that are based on, you know, being really cautioned. And in fact, significant decisions about, like, wanting to come to the monastery and help with the building of the, you know, building the new meditation hall and being on retreat and sort of doing things that I know would actually take care of myself in sort of awareness practice. And I'm actually making choices based on the messages that I'm sort of listening to and going, oh, well, that must be true because it's physical or because it's
coming
from this source.
Now, it is true in my world that we have to be, that we should be, that it's important to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
We need to live lives that are filled. But, you know, care is the most fascinating word in the English language. I think I'm going to write a book on it. I'm going to write a chapter on all of the, you know, the different permutations of the word care. Okay, so we have to be filled with care. Now, filled with care, you know, pack up all your cares and woes. That's not the one. We need to care. We need to care about life all the time, which requires constant attention,
right.
Awareness, presence.
Right.
Okay? There's no. It has nothing to do with fear or caution or concern about the future. It's care. We take care, and the only way we can take care is to be here. When we're here, when we're truly here, we take care, and that's the best we can do.
Mm.
It's not a formula for avoiding life.
Yeah, which is where I'm heading right now.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's where conditioning wants everyone to go all the time.
Right.
Yeah. All right, well,
I hear you.
Work cut out for you.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank
care
you very
is your
much.
Word.
Yeah, I will. I'll add that to the koan.
Yeah, your
I don't know, but I care.
All right, thanks, John.
Thanks, Sherry.
Take care. Bye, bye.
Thanks for joining us, John. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to break now, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Coming up next on Open Air in our second segment of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious compassionate awareness, responding to your email questions, and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Phone lines are open here. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call toll-free in North America at 866-613-1612. Sherry, it does seem like you've been focusing on that point of where do we get our information from.
Mm-hmm. It's so critical. And it's really difficult to see.
Yeah.
You know, it's first of all, I think, unless, you know, people are doing a lot of stuff that I just don't know about, it just doesn't exist as a notion for us. You know, where do you get the information? Well, you know, I think about it. You know, I decided. Are you going to have surgery or are you going to try an alternative treatment? Who makes that decision?
Yeah.
Who do you listen to?
Yeah.
To get the information that you would need to make that decision. And not knowing that just causes all kinds of horrible results in people's lives. And I just beat on that drum every chance I get.
Yes, yeah. And particularly in terms of stuff that is really, really, really real.
Oh, yeah. And almost everybody goes through the same process. Maybe there are people listening who call in and either confirm or deny this, but you know, should I stay in this job that I hate, or should I leave this job and try to find something else? Okay, so there you have it. Now the conversation begins, and it's just a field day for conditioning. You know, about what you should do and what's going to happen to you and what's responsible and what's not and fear and, you know, just, oh, all, can you picture it, all the stuff that goes on?
Oh, yeah, I've done it.
Yeah. And the piece that we don't notice is that someone is in relationship with the voices of conditioning that are going through all of these gyrations. And
yeah,
we think it's me, okay? But it is such a passing show and of aspects of the personality, right? So the person who wants to leave their job because they hate it is not the person who is afraid of being without money. They're different people.
Yes.
And so depending on which one of those people is there, we get a very different reaction to, should I do this?
Yeah.
And those are just two of the folks who are involved in that kind of decision. And then what we don't notice beyond that is that there is something that is keeping track of all of that, that is assessing it, all of that business that's going on, is interpreting it, taking it in, is giving it meaning, is believing it, is, and that's really separate, different from the passing show of aspects of the personality who are having this conversation and reacting and responding to the conditioning. So it's busy in there, and we miss the intricacies of it because what we're trained to do is go unconscious so that this can go on. And after a while, of course, the person just gets to a place of, I don't care. I don't care. I just need to do something because I can't stand being tortured any longer.
Yes.
And they usually make a decision, and then based on what their kind of habit pattern is, they either feel better or feel worse.
Yes.
either there's a, okay, yeah, this was the right thing to do because I'm actually in this job now that I enjoy for a while until conditioning takes over and turns it into something that I hate. Or, you know, if they have a really strong relationship with the conditioning that says no matter what you do, you're going to make a bad decision,
yes,
then conditioning is just going to leap in immediately and point out how that was the wrong thing to do and you shouldn't have done it and it's a big mistake and now you've ruined your life. And
yeah, yeah. Hmm? Yeah, it is busy in there.
Pardon me?
It is busy in there.
Oh, it's very busy. Yeah. And what we're not taught to do is see it as a process. What if that were a play? You know, I've fantasized about that forever. I think ever since I began my work of catching on to what's going on in there, I wanted to do a play where all of that gets acted out in front of people and they could see the workings of their mind acted out right there.
Yes.
Begin to see it as a process instead of reality.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because it has nothing to do with reality.
Right.
I mean, right. It does in the sense that it happens, but it is so not the kind of reality that people think it is. It's as real as sitting in a theater, watching something on stage. You know, if you're sitting there thinking, well, this is it. This is true. You know, this is real. This is real life. People around you are saying, it's a play. It's just a play. We're in a theater. These are actors. Okay? It's that kind of transition that we make from believing it's really, really real to seeing it as a kind of a tape loop, a television series reruns for, you know, ever.
Yes. Sherry, the phone lines are lighting up here.
Good. I hope people want to tell us their experience of that.
Yes. We have two more callers. I'd like to welcome David from Hawaii. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Thank you. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, David. We should come and be with you.
Yeah. It's actually, interestingly, I just got back from being with you. I was at the retreat last week.
I see.
Well, yeah.
How very lovely. We must return the favor.
Well, it would be an honor to have you out here.
Okay. Let's talk.
I was wondering if you could comment for me. At the retreat last week, I had a phenomenal time just being with myself and kind of the peace and quiet of what was going on, and obviously the process and the facilitation was a wonderful element. And even though you had alluded to it on the final evening, coming back after the retreat, what I've observed is this huge conditioning pattern that wants to just experience depression and nothing else right now.
Yeah. Yep. It's shocking, isn't it?
Well, it is rather shocking. I mean, I can't say that I necessarily rue what's happening. It's just happening, and I guess you use the word best. It's just rather shocking.
Yeah, because number one, you're not meant to see it. Okay? It goes, realizing that what you're describing is going on is so against what we've been told that it's very, very difficult to see it. But yes, there is that conditioned habitual system in you that wants to be depressed, that will turn any situation into something to be depressed about. It's not that it goes on and it's you and you can't help it. That's not what's going on. It's a system that wants to have that life experience and is angling for it every second.
Yeah, I've noticed that's pretty much the experience of those feelings that come along with the thought of depression, before the retreat and then going into the retreat, those were not things that were necessarily present with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so interesting to have come through the week that I had up there and then now to be experiencing almost the direct, you know, that which is in direct competition to everything that I accessed or everything that I was aware of and experienced.
That's right.
While on the retreat.
That's right. And that's the job of conditioning. It wants to get you back. So, you have a partner and years have gone by, and the relationship is rocky, this person goes off and decides to do some work to see if it's possible to put this relationship on a new footing, and you're horrified to watch yourself try to undo all of those efforts in order to get the relationship back into this familiar mode. Mm. Are we happy? No. But it's how we are. It is our relationship.
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely it's great that you put it like that. It definitely feels like some form of revenge that's being taken.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I think so. And in fact, it's actually meant to be so miserable that you will never, ever think about doing anything like that again.
Mm.
The price that you pay is meant to be horrible enough that the mere thought of doing anything that's going to take that system out of being your primary relationship is just, you know, it'll come to you and you'll say, oh, no, I don't want to go there again. It's the kind of thing that if we haven't experienced it, there's no way we're going to believe it. You have to see it with your own eyes, which you're doing, which to me, of course, is just about as good as it gets.
Yeah, it's definitely I guess the ego is a very tricky character. I mean, it's the sense that, you know, paralysis and all the other tools that are kind of being used are just, I guess on some level I experience the pain of it, and on another level I experience the true or the genuine fascination of all the different manifestations or all the different ways in which it's like, okay, well, if I take a step to the left, I hear that voice. I'll take a step to the right, I hear that voice. You know, no matter which way that I seek to, I mean, I guess, if you will, quote unquote, hide or run from it or break through it.
It's kind of horrified fascination, right?
Yeah.
It's where they say it's like watching a train wreck or something like that, where you can't believe it, you can't take your eyes off of it. So, you know, that would be my encouragement, of course, through this, that what you do is that process mapping kind of technique, where you start writing this out. You know, just as you said, I take a step to the left, and this is the voice that I hear, and then I believe that, and I feel that way, and then the voice says this, and if I go in this direction, that I chart it. Just write down every single thing that it's using, and see what happens with that.
That's good insight. I appreciate
that. It stays in control because we don't want to face it. It's just too awful. And so, as you say, we try to run, we try to hide, we try to, you know, get little, and so that maybe it won't hurt us anymore. And you know, you just need to get out your notepad and your pen and start taking notes. Because if it's going to be with you for a while, and it will, then you want to start knowing as much about it as it knows about you. It knows where every one of your buttons is, and you got to find its buttons.
Mm. So basic education or basic awareness of what quote unquote it is and how it plays out, how it manifests.
That's right. And to keep at the front of your conscious awareness, this really has nothing to do with you. It is so not personal.
Right.
It wants
you
to believe that it's very personal indeed, but it's not. It's just a survival system. Everybody's got one, and pretty much every one of them is doing the same thing to every human being. So, you know, just learn about it and get to that point where you take the step before it does. And that's the mastery that is possible for us.
Well, very good. I appreciate your insights and your encouragement on that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling in.
Okay.
Thanks
thank
for not
you, Sherry.
Just knuckling under.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, David. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have two more callers, and I'm told we have a couple extra minutes.
Wow. All right.
Let's see what...
So we talk to one person and probably realistically invite the next person back for next week, huh?
Possibly, yeah.
Okay. All right, here we go.
I'd like to welcome Mary Santa Cruz. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello, Sherry. Hello, Michael.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Doing well, thanks. What's
good.
Going on?
Well, I haven't talked to you guys in a while, and I was listening tonight, and I had an experience this week about the where we look for information. That,
oh, tell us, please.
Oh, and it was actually a good experience.
Very good.
But, you know, like most people, I can get into a, my life is wrong, I haven't done this right, and the process is the same whether it's deciding which retreat shall I go to this summer, or wanting badly to get to the monastery and do this and do that, and worrying then about, will I be able to do it all? Once you have it all planned, then, oh my goodness, I've got too much planned. I'm going to be too busy.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I just go, okay, I've noticed this very well. But the other night, I was sitting outside. It was a beautiful full moon, and I had this strange feeling, this sensation of being, I don't know how to say it, equal to my life's experience,
uh-huh.
adequate, as it were.
Yeah.
And I won't regale you with all of my wonderful accomplishments, but, you know, this whole list of spiritual development and emotional things that I've been going through, realizations, skills that I've taken up, activities and volunteer work, all that stuff kind of went through my mind from maybe several years. And I thought, you know, you go through thinking, uh-oh, I'm not sure I'm doing it right. Am I living the right life? And being all this worried when you're fine. You
uh-huh.
you really, there's center, you know, someone is in there with you that is, if you pay attention, just one thing and then the other, my life's going just fine. It was
yeah.
just such a wonderful, wonderful experience to really kind of get that.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So it's, as we were talking with David, it's when you're there with it that when you have the experience, you know, we can talk about being centered and we can talk about authentic nature and blah, 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 blah. And then you have that kind of experience of it and suddenly this is real.
Right.
Yeah, and everything kind of shifts around in a really delightful sort of way, doesn't it?
It really does.
Yeah.
And then, of course,
you let go and relax and, you know, your whole being just kind
mm-hmm.
of has a little sigh of relief.
It does.
It's fine.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's very good. I just wanted to report in about that, and hopefully I am going to get to the monastery this summer, so I hope to see you.
Excellent. I'll look forward to it.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Mary Lou. Sherry, we have a minute or two or three. Would you like to take a call, or should we?
Yeah, let's do.
Okay. I'd like to welcome Lisa from Philadelphia. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Lisa, how are you? Lisa?
Lisa, are you there? Lisa, it was going to call us back next week.
All right. Well, she's made the decision for us.
Yes.
So we will eagerly await our conversation with Lisa next week.
Yes. Yes.
It's kind of fun, isn't it, with all of the looking, you know, the looking that people do. I mean, we talk to some serious, thoughty, aware, attentive kinds of people, and just all of the different stages of when it's really difficult and what the insights are, and you know, and then when there are those moments of clarity and kind of the struggle and suffering falls away, and then there we are back in it again, and it's great.
It is great, and it's such a gift for me, the Sangha experience of it all.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
And hearing everyone's experience, and I see myself in everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I get new ideas for what's going on with me as I listen to people.
Yeah, new places to look.
Yes.
That's it's a wonderful thing. We're lucky humans.
We're lucky humans.
Yeah. All right, take care of yourself.
You too. Let's do it again next week.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry. Good night.
Good night.